give us an entrance to the real life of eternal happiness and consciousness. This is the revelation of Srimad Bhagavatam. And this particular series of chapters describing the story of King Puranjana is an allegorical story illustrating the condition of the embodied soul. We are the kings of the body. The soul, this is both for, it's both for men and women. The soul is the king of the body in this allegory. And regardless of what type of body we have, we think we are the rulers of what's happening. But in this description, now we are coming to the end, when the city of Puranjana, that means the city of the soul, which is the body. The body is described in Bhagavad Gita, Navadware Pure Dehi, the city of the nine gates. There are nine gates in the body. And Srila Prabhupada has described in the purport these nine gates and how these nine gates are affected at the time of old age, before death hits the body. So the nine gates are two eyes, two nostrils, two ears, the mouth, the rectum, and the genitals. And we, the soul, try to enjoy through the nine gates. We go out to enjoy life. The condition of the happiness we obtain through these gates is quite superficial in comparison to the amount of happiness that the soul can experience through his own glory, his own self, particularly in relation with the Supreme Self, with the Supreme Soul. It is, we can refer to it as a shadow happiness. There is happiness, but it is a shadow happiness. Like nowadays, for example, people are getting more and more, the world is becoming virtual, and many people are becoming accustomed to have exchanges through artificial means, like these online exchanges, like now in Facebook, people give the, they have this farm. Someone was telling me, one devotee, that the people who put up the farm in Facebook, they're making huge amounts of money because people are making gifts to each other. They buy the, like whatever, a cucumber, and they send it as a gift to other person, and it's a virtual cucumber. You cannot even eat it. So it's a present, but not even, the person cannot enjoy the cucumber you are giving to him or her. So it's not a very substantial gift. It's nice, you are expressing affection. But instead of having relationships in a real level of existence, now we're having more and more shadow exchanges. So similarly, the exchanges we have in the material platform of life can be compared to this Facebook. I'm not making a campaign against Facebook. I use it myself. I don't send cucumbers, but but I do use it to communicate with friends and with people. But the idea is that these exchanges are shadow exchanges. So the exchanges we have in the bodily platform of life, we try to enjoy through the senses of the body. And we forget our essential spiritual existence. And the result is that we suffer and others are suffering. So this chapter, through this chapter, Narada Muni intends to wakes us up from the illusion that we can't have a substantial enjoyment in the material platform. And he is describing how finally, ultimately, our city, the city of the nine gates we like so much, is going to be attacked by Chandavega, by Kala, by time. And here the description is about Kala Kanya. Kala Kanya is a daughter of time. Who remembers, those of you who attended previous lectures on these chapters, who remembers who is the daughter of time? Jara. Translation of Jara. Old age. Old age. And therefore, the description is given that all the parts of the body are attacked by the daughter of time. The verse reads, when Kala Kanya, daughter of time, attacked the body, the dangerous soldiers of the king of the Yavanas entered the city through different gates. And Srila Prabhupada in the purport is describing that these soldiers of the king of the Yavanas are the different pains and degradation of the different parts of the body. So they enter through the gates, and then all the gates are becoming gradually destroyed. We cannot see properly, we cannot hear properly, we cannot smell properly, we cannot chew, we cannot taste properly anymore. We cannot enjoy sexually, sometimes we cannot even evacuate properly. It becomes really difficult. And who remembers who is the king of the Yavanas in the allegorical story? The king of the Yavanas, Yavana Raj. He was the elder brother of Kala Kanya, daughter of time. He's described in two ways in the allegory, which shows the connection. I don't want to embarrass you, but I want to help you to remember and get more into the story. Any guesses? Fear, yes. He was fear, Baya. Fear, and he's also described as Yamaraj. Yamaraj is the personality who controls death. It's death. And death and fear, for a materialistic person, are synonymous. They come together. So, therefore, he is the older brother of old age. Old age comes, and what comes next? Death. So, and death, it appears everywhere. There is another one devotee, actually it was Bhaktisundar Goswami Maharaj. He was telling a story. I don't know how literal it is, or could be also allegorical, but it shows very well how death will get us, no matter how much we try to escape it, through scientific methods, through taking natural products, spirulina, and all kinds of products. We may take all these things, and I don't mean we don't take them. We can take them, but death will find us. There is a story of there was this little bird. There was a great celebration of a yajna's sacrificial ceremony, and all the great personalities of the universe, all the devas, were present. Indra, Vayu, Varuna, Of course, Yamaraj was also there, the demigod of death. So then it happened, they were preparing to start the yagya, the chanting of mantras and all the offerings to the demigods. And there was a bird, he was flying by, and suddenly Yamaraj looked at the bird with a very serious face, and the bird became very scared. You can imagine, if death looks at you, you become scared. What is his intention? Will he do something to me? So the bird became very, very scared. He was so scared, trembling, that he went to Garuda Dev. We heard sometimes the story of the sparrow who got help from Garuda Dev. Maybe that bird had heard something. So he went to Garuda Dev, and then he said, "I'm very afraid, I'm very afraid." Garuda Dev is the gigantic bird carrier of Lord Vishnu. So he's very powerful, he has divine powers. So Garuda Dev said, what's the matter? What happens? Nothing. The thing is that Yamaraj look at me very serious. I'm very scared he will take me. So Garuda Dev said, no problem. You come on my shoulder and he will take you far away from here. You will be protected. So he took him to Brahmaloka. Brahmaloka, that's quite extraordinary. By the mercy of Garuda Dev, that little bird, who was not entitled to be in Brahmaloka, he went to Brahmaloka. So then, okay, they had the yagya, everything happened. Then after the yagya, they were having some prasad together and they were talking. So Garuda Dev took the opportunity and asked Yamaraj, You should be a little bit more careful to scare little people. Like this little bird, you scare it, and came to me, and he said, what little bird? Yes, in the beginning of the yagya, there was this little sparrow, and you look at him. He said, oh, that bird. Yes, no. I look at him. I didn't mean anything. I was wondering, because I'm due to take him in such and such amount of time in Brahmaloka. I was wondering how he was going to reach there. So no matter where we hide in this material universe, death will find us. And the Bhagavad Gita describes, Abrahma bhuvanal loka punar punaravartino arjuna mamupetya tu kaunteya punar jammana vidyate. From the highest material planet, even Satyaloka, Brahmaloka, a planet where it is the lifespan is practically speaking, is compared to immortality for us. To the lowest planet, every place is a place of birth and death, and we all will find it. This is the condition of material existence. So the purpose of these descriptions in Srimad Bhagavatam is to indicate that actually this is not the real life. The life in the material body is a conditioned life. And to organize our life in such a way that we think that this is the real life, it is actually being dead, although breathing. We find many of such statements in Srimad Bhagavatam. Although we are breathing like the bellows of the blacksmith, now maybe they don't use it that much, maybe in villages, but they breathe. There is air. But that doesn't mean there is life there. So the fact that we are breathing does not necessarily mean that we are alive. We may be living a life of a dream. It's a This is a comparison given in the Bhagavatam. It's a dreamy condition of existence. So in order to awaken our real life, the Srimad Bhagavatam describes the life of pure devotees who, despite the fact that they were in front of death, they were not fearful because they had attained eternal consciousness in this, even in this embodied condition of life. So the process of bhakti yoga is about attaining eternal consciousness in this condition of life. And this is what we are doing. This is the process of hearing about Krishna, chanting the holy names of Krishna, worshipping Krishna, remembering the activities of great devotees, and following in their footsteps. All these processes are part of the process to awaken our real life, are actually part of our real life. In the beginning, we are still waking up, like when we wake up in the morning, and there is a transition between the dreamy state of consciousness to the real state of consciousness. And then we come to a point where we are awake, and then, okay, we can function according to who I am, following the analogy. So, but for a devotee, there is no difference between living or dying. Living or dying is the same, because the same eternal consciousness is there. For a materialistic person, there is difference. There is bhaya, there is fear. Because whatever one has achieved through great endeavor, great work, or even if we didn't do the work in this lifetime, even if we did it in previous lives, and then, therefore, according to our karma, we got an inheritance. In this life, we got some big amount of money, and we can live without working. And we can enjoy life. Even if we do this, actually this will end at the time of death. Srila Prabhupada used to tell the story of the sage who was giving different types of blessings to different people. Like sometimes people go to the person who is who reads the future. Many times there is one devotee in Madrid, his name is Laxman, and he is expert in astrology and even the tarot. He reads the future. So sometimes businessmen come to him to ask questions about what will happen. Will I get money in the future or not? So similarly, in previous times in India, even nowadays sometimes happens, people, instead of going to the astrologer, they will go to see a great sage, who, of course, many times they were great brahmanas, they were experts in astrological sciences. And this devotee, Laxman, he actually uses that to teach them about Krishna consciousness, whenever possible, of course. But whenever possible, he recommends them something that will do well to them in terms of developing eternal life. So what happened in this case is that four people came to the sage asking for advice, and he was giving different blessings. He gave advice, and then first he said, okay, what about the future? And then they will ask, please give me a blessing. And according to the person, he will say this or that. So there was a prince came to him, and then he told the prince, you live always. You should live always. Then, I'll explain, but different people came. Then there was a butcher. The butcher came to get the blessing, and he said, do not live, do not die. That was the blessing. Then a brahmachari, a monk who was practicing penances, came to him, and then he told him, die immediately. And then a pure bhakta, a pure devotee of the Lord came, and then he said, you may live, you may die. So this was like different blessings for different people. For the prince, you live as long as possible. Because the idea is that now you are enjoying life, but when Kalakanja hits you, when you become old, all your kingdom will be taken away. And you maybe take birth as a poor person in the kingdom. If there were some mismanagement happening during the ruling of the king, then what may happen is that he has to take birth as a poor person and get the imbalance in the kingdom. He may have to get it later on. So, therefore, you live as long as possible. To the butcher, do not live, do not die. Do not live because by killing animals every day, you are making others suffer. You are not really enjoying, even if you feel like enjoying, it's not real enjoyment. And you are accumulating a great amount of karma that you will have to pay in your next life. And then, if you die, you have accumulated so much karma that you are going to suffer. Therefore, the sage said, my blessing is, do not live, do not die. For the monk, die immediately. Why? Because the monk has performed spiritual activities, austerities, which elevate him to higher levels in the universe, closer to spirituality. But there is a chance that you will not be able to remain a monk for life, and you may become entangled in materialistic activities. This happens many times, isn't it? A priest who get married and so many different things happen. So the idea, therefore, die immediately, because now you are doing okay. If you die now, your destination will be good. And for a pure devotee of the Lord, it doesn't matter if he is man or woman, if he is married or a monk, if he is Indian, American, European, African, it doesn't matter. For a pure devotee of the Lord, you may live, you may die. Why? Because while you are living, you are engaged in the eternal life of devotional service to Krishna continuously. And you are experiencing the happiness of Krishna consciousness. Or at least if you are a sadhaka, you are a practitioner devotee, you are on the process of waking up and engage in eternal activities of the soul. Therefore, you may live, no problem. And you also may die, because when you die, you will go back home, back to Godhead, or you will continue engaging the life of bhakti from the same point where you were experiencing this transcendental consciousness. Therefore, you may live, you may die. And there is no fear for a devotee whatsoever. The question may be raised that in reality, we sometimes may feel fear, isn't it? Devotees, sometimes, especially when we get older, we may feel fear. Oh, what's going to happen next? No, I have my connections, I have my roots, isn't it? I have my roots, my place, my position, my community, my people, so I'm not alone. So there could be such a question may be raised that what it happens. And one answer is that the psychophysical conditioning of the embodied soul is that these tendencies will become manifest. But then when we take shelter of the devotees, of Krishna and the devotees, then whatever remaining reminiscences of fear are there will go away. And we should not worry about it. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Sarva dharmam parityajya mamekam sharanam braja aham tuam sarva papebhyo moksha jishyami masuchaha. Abandon everything, abandon all dharmas, abandon all so-called duties, and just surrender unto me. I will take care of you. I will free you. Do not fear. I'm driving the car, Krishna says. You just relax. You are the passenger. I'm driving. You just surrender. You just enter into the right car, Krishna's car of devotional, pure devotional service. It is actually Srimati Radharani's transcendental rat. And just the performing devotional service we are taking by Krishna. We don't have to do anything. Recently, the last class I gave speaking about death, I don't want to scare anybody now, nor to create an inauspiciousness in terms of that something happens. But this was 1 week ago in Galicia, in North Spain, and then I drove that very same day to Madrid. When I reached Madrid in the evening, one devotee phones me, and then his wife was in Facebook, and then she says, Dinabandhu Prabhu from Vrindavan is asking if we know Luis Carlos Flores. Luis Carlos Flores. This was a Spanish name. Of course, I knew him. He was, if we take the calculations of the life of dream, embodied life, Nila Kamala Prabhu, a directly initiated disciple of Srila Prabhupada, who had passed away in Vrindavan, but somehow the passport was under the bed. Somehow it fell off or whatever, so they couldn't find the passport immediately. So he was using Facebook for finding out who is, because it was May, and it was very hot in Vrindavan. You can imagine to maintain the body and to do all the rituals, you need to know who is that person and so on. So, of course, I knew, and then I immediately contacted Dinabandhu Prabhu and said who he was. But the fact, what happened, Nilakamala Prabhu went to Vrindavan for a visit, a pilgrimage. He was 60 years old. He was not expecting that he will pass away at that moment, because Dinabandhu Prabhu told me, I asked him what happened, and what was the external cause. It seems it was a heart attack. And then he told me, he was speaking to Ganapati Prabhu, the guest manager. He was not feeling well during the days he was there. And he was planning to go to Mumbai for treatment. I don't know where, perhaps to the Bhaktivedanta Hospital. And then he was planning to go there for treatment, but Krishna took him in Vrindavan. And then something mystical that happened is that there was another friend of him. His name is Shakti Treya Prabhu. Shakti Treya happened to go to Vrindavan separately, and they had been serving together in the early 80s in Vrindavan in the Pujari department. They were serving together, and Shakti Treya told Nilakamala Prabhu, no, the other way around. Nilakamala Prabhu told Shakti Treya, if I pass away, I want you to do, to lighten the funeral fire and to throw my ashes into the Yamuna. So what happened is that Shakti Treya was, after 2-3 days, it took 2-3 days to do the ceremony, the burning of the body, and they had to keep it with ice because according to the government rules was difficult. They had to contact the family, and it was difficult because he was living by himself, so it was a whole thing to do all the legal procedures. Finally, they gave the okay, and they were going to burn the body. And Dinabandhu Prabhu was leading the procession with the body, taking it to the Yamuna. And then this devotee, looking like South American, because Dinabandhu knows a devotee from South America style, was there in the corner. And then he said, are you from South America? And this was Shakti Treya. And then he said, yes, this is Nilakamala's body. When he knew it was him, he said, okay, come, join us. And then he lighted the funeral pyre and put the ashes into the Yamuna. And because Shakti Treya told him that, Nila told me 20 years, not 20, almost, 20, almost 30 years ago, told me to do this. Anyway, I'm telling this, these mystical things happen in life, but also this shows how Krishna takes care of the devotees. I'm telling this story because Krishna takes care of the devotees. And from the external point of view, you could say he was not externally so successful. He started two families, didn't work out, so he married once. Something happened, didn't continue. He married again, tied again, didn't work out. Then he was alone by himself. So you could say, from the external point of view, was not apparently so successful. But then Krishna takes into account whatever service a devotee performs, that goes forever. And therefore, the sage said, you may live, you may die. And these are the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching us to enter into the life of eternity, the eternal life of divine loving service to Sri Krishna, to the personality of Godhead, and to enter into his pastimes. We enter into this life, and when we quit this material body, we continue naturally. Either directly we are there, or we continue progressing to such an awakened stage of consciousness. Thank you very much for your kind attention. If you like to ask questions or make comments, we don't have too much time, but I can take a couple of them. I speak a lot about death, and usually no one dies, so don't worry. But we should be prepared anytime death comes. So we should, if you are properly situated, no problem. Consciousness is there. Krishna will take care. And even if we are not conscious, Krishna is taking care. That's the good news. That even if sometimes we forget, the Lord is so merciful, he never forgets. He never forgets. Whatever sincere service we offer to him, he will remember. Like once Ramanujacharya asked this question to one of his gurus. His guru, Kanchipurna was his name. He asked the deity, he had the power of communicating with Krishna in the temple. And then the question was, what happens if a devotee forgets Krishna at the time of death? And then the Lord replied, if a devotee forgets me at the time of death, due to all these attacks that happened here, I don't forget my devotee. This is my vow. I will take care of my devotee. The transcendental. Well, I meant, what I meant is, I was just giving a modern analogy, invented, whatever came, comparing a car, riding a car, like we don't need to be the drivers ourselves. Krishna is riding the car, we're just doing service. The master, he's going, we go wherever the master is taking us. So we are the servants. The servants will go wherever the master goes. But when I said that Srimati Radharani rides the cart, is that because actually we can go by the mercy of Srimati Radharani, who is the mistress of pure bhakti, we can go anywhere. If we don't do service, we cannot go anywhere. That's why I, in my mind, making the analogy, said it is Radharani's cart. But it is actually, it is Radha Gopinath's cart. They go together. They don't go alone. Shri Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Nittai Gaur Premanande.